Welcome back to The Wild Hunt, a No Ship Network podcast covering the History Channel's television series, Vikings. I am your host, Em.
And I'm your host, Steve.
And we are discussing Vikings Season 5B, Episode 511, or Episode 11 of Season 5. And this one is titled The Revelation. And this is, of course, written by Michael Hurst and directed by Kieran Donnelly.
New season, or new half season. First episode, I liked it. I liked the pacing of it. I liked how it just, you've been gone for a while, and then you come back, and you've had to have done your research. You know, there's no spoon feeding you on what's going on or anything like that. But it's not jarring or anything like that. So I felt like it was, especially after second watch, it feels really even and balanced to me.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it was a little bit off watching it the first time, but I was able to kind of talk to myself about some things that were happening as I was watching it the second time, especially in regards to the behavior of Bjorn, his very Ragnar-like behavior, which I know that's been something that's been progressing over the last maybe two half seasons.
Yeah, about, yeah.
But it was so prominent in this episode that it threw me off a little bit, but I actually think I might understand it now. Like, it could be some sort of like overcompensation he's performing with his issue with the idea of Rollo being his dad.
The revelation of the title, I'm guessing.
Right.
Okay. I could buy that. That's the best way to look at that, because some of it did feel over the top on first view. So looking at it that way is the most charitable way to do it. And I gel with that. So you want to jump right into recap?
Yeah. So this episode opens with Ivar's army pouring into Kattegat, and he makes his big announcements to the inhabitants of Kattegat. I think in the main claim he's laying down is the fact that he's Ragnar's son. Mm-hmm. Later, celebration is happening, and it seems chaotic, as often these Viking celebrations appear to be. Ivar is pissing on the throne. He's bemoaning the fact that he can't fully celebrate because Lagertha is still alive and well. Harald has his own reasons to be depressed. In fact, he specifically states that he has gained the world, but he has lost everything, and he's referring to Astrid, his baby, mm-hmm. and his brother.
Yeah, Halfdan, that was hard. It brings to mind that whole old proverb, and I'm paraphrasing it here, so if I don't get it exactly right, too bad. But it says, what does a man profit should he gain the world yet lose his soul?
Ah.
You know, and that's I don't know who to attribute that to, but it's a old saying, and it's kind of like, beware of the, what is it, Pyrrhic victories?
Uh-huh.
Where the cost of victory is more than the what you gain at the end of it,
yeah.
kind of thing. And that's definitely happening for Harald. He's not happy about it. And then I think Ivar's happy with the victory, but he's still not satiated. He doesn't have his grand prize of Lagertha's head on a spike. And one of the things I liked about this scene at the very beginning is, you know, that everybody from Kattegat had gone to fight their forces. So now he comes back and he's like, it's just kind of the way things are. If you lay down your arms and you show fealty to the new king, you get to kind of go on with your life as before, mm-hmm. because they want to, you know, solidify the control over everybody. So it's just like, hey, bow to the king and everything goes back like it was the day before yesterday and it's all good. So for the regular people who weren't out there trying to, you know, be part of the fighting, that's kind of a nice option, I guess. So what did you think about Ivar pissing on the throne?
Well, it's definitely a mockery of the idea of rule, or what maybe the idea of rule that came before him.
Hmm.
That's not his reason for taking Kattegat, the idea of rule.
Right.
So it all has to do more with Lagertha. So he's achieved that, but he pisses on it. It's not what he wants.
Did it struck me that he could be like an animal marking his territory almost.
Oh, yeah. That's probably better.
Yeah. You know? Like, he's just in just the most crude way possible. Like, instead of a cat spraying, he's just going to piss all over it and say, this is mine. Who else would dare sit here after I've done this? Just this really overcompensating way to find dominance over a situation.
Hmm. It's a more simpler explanation.
As Harald is kind of spilling out his worries and woes and why he's not happy with things, which, you know, they're perfectly legitimate, but all brought on by himself, really. Ivar's just like, hey, why don't you just don't worry about it? Look, there's beautiful women everywhere.
And life goes on.
Yeah, life goes on. It's not that big of a deal, bud. And so over behind a curtain almost, you see who we learn her name later on is Freydis. And they kind of make meaningful eye contact.
And she's the slave he freed last half season.
Yes. Which it took me a minute to realize that. because she looks a lot more well-groomed and she's presented differently.
Harold makes a toast to Ivar at this point, and Ivar yells, "Bring in the queen!" And it's a goat that's got this makeshift crown on, and he sits on the throne with the goat next to him.
Everybody have fun tonight. Everybody Wang Chung tonight.
And this is a way to kind of show a connection to his father. It's a mutated version of it.
Yeah, because, I mean, everybody remembers when you're talking about how...
Ragnar and the baby goats.
Yep. he would almost hide behind them in a certain way. He would just pet them, and not physically, but he would use them as a protective barrier. Like, you can't come and be all confrontational and mean to me. I've got a baby goat right here.
The next scene takes place in Iceland with Floki and his followers. And there's only two scenes of this, so we're going to go ahead and discuss it in full and then move on to the rest of the scenes of this episode. Floki is speaking to his followers and about stopping the vicious cycle of revenge and killing, and he offers himself as sacrifice, to which the people are divided on. Eivind makes a case for Floki's death at this point, and he claims Floki deserves to die as punishment. And you see Floki bow his head and look kind of broody or brooding at this point. And that already is kind of marring his plan here, because if he were to sacrifice himself and then you have someone kind of like hijacking his idea and turning it into something else, that is something as punishment and not something Floki's offering to save it. And it's already messed up and it's not going to go according to Floki's plan here.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. It becomes, like you said, it becomes a punishment to him, and it becomes some sort of just desserts, because Floki screwed this all up. He brought them to a shit place, and he did it on purpose because he's just a bad person. And so, because he wanted to be a god himself. And in that sense, it would seem justifiable. It wouldn't be a sacrifice. It would be an execution.
Yeah, I guess the way I should describe it is that Eivind's hijacking the narrative.
Yes, yeah.
That Floki's putting forth.
You know, there's a contrast here, too, to the way that this scene ended in the last episode, 510, because at the end of that, or the last part that we got in Iceland, Floki was just going up there to do it. He was like, all right, you know, all of our other options are kind of spent, and you guys are doing all this bad stuff, so I'm going to sacrifice myself to the gods to make sure that this settlement can live in peace. And then, at the beginning of this, he's like, well, actually, I can't just decide that for you. We're going to have to put it to a vote. So everybody who spent, you know, most of this last year in 2018 thinking that Floki was going to die right away.
Well, can you justify him deciding to do that?
Yes, I think so. Because he's basically saying that this has to be the will of the people too. Do you want me to make this sacrifice in your name? Because it's almost like he's giving them a power. Because
so that's the risk he took then. By offering it to them, and then it makes it possible for people like Eivind to hijack the reason behind it.
Right, yeah. But then it comes out the way that it should, because even though it was pretty much a 50-50 split until Eivind's son came in, and
Helgi?
Helgi. Until Helgi comes in and decides the casting vote. So he's kind of, in a way, he's given them this power that he makes them feel that they've decided something for themselves. He's taken himself out of a leadership role, and he said, okay, well, decide amongst yourselves. So it's like the gift of real democracy.
Yeah.
I suppose. Huh. No electoral college in this bullshit here. This just popular vote only for Floki.
So you mentioned Helgi, and he ends up refusing to support Floki's cause, which likely will reinforce more of the division that's already there.
Yeah. Yeah. We have not seen the last of hijinks from Eivind. He's either going to have this massive, almost unbelievable change of heart, or somebody's going to have to take him out, because he's not going to stop being a troublemaker, because all of the things he says negative about Floki are just a reflection of the negative things he feels. He wants to be the ruler. Mm-hmm. He thinks he's the smartest, and so on and so forth.
So now back in Kattegat, as the last half season finale promised, we are treated to the arrival of Rollo.
Yeah.
He meets with Ivar and Harold and states that Kattegat's characteristics make it an attractive opportunity for an alliance. Harold wonders aloud if Rollo may want to rule Kattegat, and Rollo claims that he has enough on his plate in that regard. Rollo says that they will strike a trade deal that will be favorable to him.
Yeah, that's an understatement.
More on that later. Rollo then points out the lack of hospitality, unlike previous rulers of the past, including Ragnar, he says, and this is also a way of pointing out the failings of Ivar compared to his own father.
the little jabs. It's the little jabs that matter when it comes to family stuff. I would also like to point out that Clive Stanton is doing an excellent job of putting on the part of a winded old man.
Yeah.
The way he breathes and gets a little bit wheezy and has to catch his breath just from a simple conversation sitting in a chair drinking some ale.
Do you think he was putting it on for them, though, a little bit? Maybe laying it down a little too thick?
It hadn't occurred to me, but that's entirely possible because yeah. He wants them to maybe underestimate him a little bit mm-hmm. until he comes back with the zinger at the end and says, this is what I will extract out of you, and you're going to agree to it because...
So on that note, as you're describing, he's telling Ivar, Harold, and Fitzurk that he is jealous that he can't go to war anymore. But it's not really because of his age. It's more of he's being protected by people in his class.
Yes.
Because they want him to stay in the position of rule.
And Princess Gisela has probably told him, like, you're not to lift a sword. Right. You're not going to. And at this point, he's listening to her.
In this moment, we are reminded that Ube spared Fitzurk, and a point is made to show Rollo's medicating himself. He's got this little glass vial mm-hmm. that he's able to pour into a scoop and administer to himself. Is it lisinopril?
Yeah. Is he controlling some high blood pressure? Does he have some older gentleman issues, you know, with the whatever, his heart maybe? Who knows?
It was blue. It might be Viagra.
Oh, he's expecting some action later on tonight. that's why he asks where Lagertha is in short order here. But
Harold confesses to Rollo he killed his brother, and Rollo takes this in stride and says he tried to kill his own brother once, which I don't think Harold finds comforting at all, being closely parallel to Rollo, the infamous traitor.
The infamous traitor, yeah. I like how you have this this divide going on, because you have Harold and Ivar, who have both killed their brothers. And then you have Rollo and Fitzurk, one who has been spared by his brother and one who failed to kill his brother. So you can almost kind of sit them on two sides of a divide. And which it kind of brings to mind, like, Fitzurk was underutilized in this episode. So I'm wondering, there's this scene and the scene later on with Margrethe, and that's all you really get out of him. Mm-hmm. And so, both of those scenes kind of exemplify in him a little bit of a change away from the way that Harold and Ivar see things. At least that's how I perceived it to be. So I don't know if we're getting set up for Fitzurk to be a traitor to them and kind of jump ship, like he should have never got on the ship.
He's like the chaotic neutral character of the brothers.
Yeah.
You just never really know.
You can't pin him down. Yeah. And he changes so much. I think Hurst has a little bit of fun with that. And being able to just play him however, wherever the needs need to be suited.
Rollo asks if Ube lives, and then about Bjorn. He celebrates Bjorn's military prowess because he himself instructed Bjorn in the Viking martial arts. And I really like this scene where they're celebrating the fact that Ube and Bjorn are still alive, even though they're on opposing sides of this battle here.
Yeah. It is nice. It gives you that warm and fuzzy feeling a little bit because it's also part of the Viking culture to be able to respect your enemies like that. And, you know, because you see that in other times, too, when there's the respect for Jarl Borg and his sons and things like that. You have that kind of respect, I guess, for there's no other word for it, but a regard, however you mm-hmm. want to put it. But it's nice that they were able to laugh and smile about that.
And it's only making Harold feel even worse.
Yeah, he's just like, man, Halfdan could be here with me and say, we fought each other on the battlefield, brother, but now we drink. And
wouldn't even necessarily have to be there with him. He could just be still celebrating the fact that his brother is alive.
Yeah, he didn't have to kill him.
Ivar, though, brings up the fact that Lagertha is still alive and Rollo wants to know where she is. They don't know yet. Rollo wishes them luck. And the way he says it, I thought he already knew.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, they're on his boats right now.
And I, you know, once you had said that on our first viewing, I agreed with that. I was like, I bet you're right. I bet you're fucking right about that because of the way he takes the drink out of his cup and kind of looks around and he's like, And you see the wheels turning like, oh, I can't look too suspicious because I've already helped out their enemies. But alas,
he looks suspicious anyway.
That was not the case. Ivar is such a drag. He just won't let the Lagertha thing go.
Yeah.
He's just let it go.
At Bjorn and Lagertha's camp, Ube, the genius, asks why don't they go to Hedeby?
So wouldn't it have been cool if Torvi just hit him with a stick, like right upside the head, and said, what are you thinking?
But when he said that, I was like, seriously, you idiot? Why would you guys go to Hedeby? The most obvious place that Lagertha would go.
it's almost so obvious that they maybe could have like stopped there just to catch their breath, because Ivar was going to be like, certainly they're not going to Hedeby, so we're not even going to look there. But how long would it have taken a traitorous rider to go back with that information?
Yeah.
So it's a good idea to stay away from that. And Ube just doesn't. It's just not the best suggestion I've ever heard.
Lagertha refuses to believe that this is how her life will end. She believes she is worth more than what Ivar has in store for her. And I agree with this.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want that for her myself. I suspect she's going to be the female Viking body that's found in England. She's going to be that warrior body. And maybe Ivar is going to have to come up with an alternative solution using Freydis, maybe having her pose as Lagertha.
Oh.
And kill her.
Ooh.
Because she did say she'd give her life. I think if he hears of Lagertha's death in England, he's still going to need to. It's more about saving face, I think, for him.
Yeah, I could see that.
And so he needs to present it still in a way that he had the upper hand over her.
I can totally see that, because it won't make him happy. But a lot of what he does is for the perception that it puts out there. So, I mean, any king has to do that in any time, really. I was going to say in this day and age, but in any time, really, leaders have to. They rely so heavily on perception. But I'm not really sure where I'm going with that, but I agree with what you're saying. I could see him doing that.
Ube wonders aloud that there has to be some place that they should go. And Bjorn gets his Ragnar on. He is sure Ivar will chase him to the ends of the earth. So this is where we start to see that behavior that he has learned from his father really become exalted here. It's really over the top. And so that's why I'm critical of it, because, you know, we all know people that are related to other people. And you can see, you know, certain attributes as far as like how people behave or their mannerisms. But it's usually like few and far between, and it's just hints of it, really subtle things, not this like complete replicant type behavior.
No, very, very rarely. Because even if it starts to become something like that, you as the person doing it, once somebody makes you aware of it, you almost consciously strive to not do it, because you want to have your own individuality. You want to be your own self. You don't want to be like the reincarnation of this person, or just or like part two.
It feels sort of like a shtick.
It does. It does. It, but, you know, he's going for it, though. I mean, he's invested like bodily. I mean, I could just picture him like just watching tapes. You know what I mean? Like having like Hurst was like, okay, I need you to watch these old episodes of Travis doing his thing and just get this down, get the movements there, you know? So even the body language comes through.
I bet it's Alexander Ludwig's idea.
You think so?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's my guess.
Either way, he's going for the gold, mm-hmm. and it provides a little bit of comic relief, perhaps unintentionally sometimes, but, you know, because it does feel over the top. But in light of what's coming up in the rest of the episode, the revelation, so to speak, you can kind of see why they're building us up for it. So Bishop Heckman?
Yeah, I think Heckman.
All right, we're going to go with Heckman.
That's how Lagertha says it.
It's this kind of back of the throat sound where the H should be. It's more like a CKH. Bishop Heckman comes up with the idea that they should all go to England. And of course, it sounds crazy to everybody at first. But then he's like, look, you know, if I can talk to Aethelwulf, King Aethelwulf, about this and convince him, you know, of course, he hasn't gotten the nobody sent him the email about the bee sting yet, of course. So he's thinking that they're going to be able to just go back and say, look, we have these key Vikings who are going to help us fight against the other Vikings in return for safe place to live, a sanctuary. And so head over to England as refugees. And they don't seem to want to do it, but it's the best idea out of a bunch of bad ideas.
Yeah. First, when he said he will certainly welcome you, I guffawed at that. And then when he continued to say that, but he will ask you to fight for him against the Danes and the other raiding Vikings, I was like, oh, what a coup that would be.
To turn them into sellswords for the Saxons?
Yeah.
I mean, that would be a big feather in any king's cap, to be like, look, I have my pet Vikings that are going to make sure they train all of these other guys and then head the forces to repel all the other Vikings.
The use of that idea against raiding Vikings, that we've turned your own people against you.
Yeah, that would be a
And you would still be punishing those Vikings that you're using as sellswords by putting them into that situation.
Yeah, because they'd be fighting their own people. And that mm-hmm. would, you know, some people don't have enough scruples to care about that, but
true.
This group does. Mm-hmm. So that's going to be a little bit of a hard sell for them.
Filagrafa takes a moment here to say that she doesn't want to leave her home, her country. She's tired of fighting, and yet she says, let's do it. I wish she had maybe said a little bit more, because it seems a really quick about face here without much explanation as to why she's agreeing to go, despite her feelings.
Right. It's almost like she's looking at someone going, I hate you. You stink. You're ugly. Let's get married. You know, you there's not that connective tissue of verbiage that gets you to the place where you need to be.
I guess we should think about what she said before about how she just can't believe that her life's going to end up in the way that Ivar would deal it out. This is obviously her only option. Mm. At least at this point, this is all she thinks is her only option until Rollo shows up.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, she does get another option, but they turn that down. Uh-huh. So we get a quick scene of Rollo riding into the Remnant encampment with a couple of his guards, I guess they were.
Yeah, I mean, first we see him actually sneak in the night away from Ivar's, or away from Kattegat. He takes a companion with him. So he must have sent somebody out to go and scout out and find them. He must have gotten word and then left
went
straight there.
That makes sense. It almost feels like he's sneaking out of Jabba's palace, you know, because everybody was just expected to all fall asleep in front of Ivar, and after they've had their fill of
Ivar's
drink.
Jabba.
Yeah, he's got one eye open. So now we see that Margrethe is actually in captivity. She's being kept with the pigs, and her hands are bound together because she is obviously crazy and dangerous. So she's proven that she cannot be let free to roam around because she's going to commit murder and mayhem. And Torvi comes to give her some food, and she asks to see her husband, and then, you know, gets mad at Torvi for stealing her husband from her. And she's like, okay, this is so condescending. When Torvi gets down, she's like, I'll tell him to come see. And she throws her food at her and says, I'll kill you, I'll kill you. You know, true colors come right back out.
Well, Torvi's practicing restraint.
She is, and she's doing a good job about it.
So Margrethe, a.k.a. Regret, appeals to Ube, and he feels that she's too dangerous to set free. So he and Torvi are unsure what to do with her at this point, but she will not be going with them to England. That is for sure.
So at this point, did you think that they were going to just end her life or what? Because he just kind of like, what are we going to do with her? And he just shrugs and walks away like he's leaving it up to her, Torvi.
I don't know. I didn't really entertain any other possibilities because I don't really care that much about Margrethe. So,
yeah, I thought they were going to just whenever Ivar got there, that he was going to find a Margrethe with, you know, maybe an arrow through her and a little note that says like, went to England. See you later.
See ya. Bye, Felicia.
Yeah, bye, Felicia. Yeah, not that they would tell them where they're going, obviously, but
Lagertha and Heckman take a walk and they talk about how things will change when they get to England. He's at first giving her the girl it's been fun but speech. But then he says he can't renounce her. So I don't trust him as far as what he's saying to her. But of course, as things have taken place with Lagertha and her lovers, they have all betrayed her. So he would be the one who wouldn't.
True. Yeah. You know, when he says, I'm going to be bishop again, and in my religion, I have to be celibate to hold that position. So we can't be together, but I can't give you up. It seems kind of silly to me because we're introduced to this character with a sex scene.
Yeah.
So, you know, and he does kind of pay a little bit of lip service to that when he says that he has had lustful feelings towards women before, but he always finds a way back to Christ. So it's kind of like after he gets off, he's just like, oh, crap, what have I done? I'm supposed to be the bishop. I can't do this anymore. And he's just filled with regret. And he goes and jumps in a cold stream and then does 100 push-ups. And then he's back to super bishop mode or something. I don't know what that all entails. But I mean, I don't know. It seems like that's a... why is he even bothering talking about it? Like after everything he's seen and experienced, it's just either don't accept that position because you know you can't be away from her, because you're courting disaster by doing that anyway.
It just seems dishonest though, because with him describing that he had lustful feelings really minimizes his engagement with the opposite sex while he was in that position. I don't feel like he's being honest, actually.
Yeah, because lustful feelings could be, if he's just saying that, that could be like, you know, I saw some women at church and I put them in the spank bank. But he's talking about like having sex. What he actually did was having sex with widows and all other kinds of shenanigans that we didn't get to see.
But meanwhile, Rollo and his companion arrive to the Bjorn and Lagertha camp. But more on that later, because we're going to head over to Wessex. And I actually found the Wessex events to be the most intriguing of this episode. I really liked King Alfred presiding over his first Witan. I thought he did a great job. In fact, he's ordered that monasteries and religious houses in his realm to offer prayers and teachings in English. And you can hear a little uproar happening among his congregate. Lord Cuthred steps up and declares that Alfred doesn't have such authority over the church. Aetherrud takes up for Alfred, and Alfred responds also effectively as well. In fact, I really liked the pause that Alfred takes before speaking. It's like he is willing himself not to respond emotionally. And he was just kind of taking in and almost cataloging or categorizing what was happening before him, like assessing the situation as this is that, and I'm going to respond in a way that's in the interest of my decision and not the interest of my ego.
Yeah. Yeah, I totally see that, because the both things that you're saying, because when he categorizes it, he says, Cuthred is worried about my threatening his power, so I need to craft a response that's going to reassure him that I'm not after the church's power, and I understand my position in relation to all this, but it's what I said initially about giving knowledge to everyone still stands, motherfucker. So, and you know, back then it was understood that the king rules at the pleasure of God, whose voice and intention is shown through the church and its representatives. So all the people with the big, you know, silly hats and stuff are the ones who are going to be able to. And I felt like he got the better of them, but lets him
like
save,
a boss,
like a boss, but lets him save face at the same time. And he brings up the, you know, and he kind of smoothly just transitions this into, but why are we fighting amongst ourselves while we're circled by the wolves? And, you know, they're attacking Scotland and Ireland and other places in England. And the Vikings were just attacking Winchester, where I'm going to send my brother to go, you know, kick their ass. And so I'm wondering if this scene, when, you know, the fact that there's, you know, actually Danish Vikings coming to attack at Winchester sort of lays down the groundwork for the necessity or the desire to have Bishop Heckman's idea come to fruition of making them sell swords, like saying this is happening all over the British Isles, so they're going to welcome you with open arms. So it's kind of reinforcing it.
Yeah, I think there's going to be that. And then also they made a point to have a connection made between Alfred and Ragnar before Ragnar was himself taken away in one of those caged carts as Bjorn and Lagertha arrived in. So those cage carts are connecting that moment, as well as Athelstan makes the connection, being the father of King Alfred.
Yeah.
It's
a nice little subtle touches like that that
yeah.
you see on your second or third viewing, that just the aha moments where you're like, oh, I like that.
We do have a quick scene of the Danish Vikings that are invading near Winchester. Their fleet that's on the rivers. So next we're back with Lagertha. She's asking Rollo how he found them. And he knew where they were, because that's where they had hid when they fled Jarlborg. Which, it's a callback for us to a time that we really loved during this television series. It's also a time when they were all working together still as a family.
Better times.
Better times in the face of adversity. But Rollo claims that he is there to offer them safe passage to Francia. Lagertha doesn't understand him, based on everything that she's seen so far, and the fact that he just decided to join Ivar against them. It flies in the face of reason as far as she's concerned.
Yeah, it does. And as far as we're concerned, too, because while we're here at this subject, you start thinking about it and you're like, OK, Fitzurk gets in touch with him and Rollo, and he decides to commit a certain amount of the Francian forces to the side of Ivar and Harold, because he wants to, you know, strategically, Kattegat is a good training post. You could have done the exact same thing with the woman you love, in air quotes, and your son, in air quotes, and had the same outcome. You could have driven these people out, fortified their hold on Kattegat, and still had even more favorable situation, because you're going to get brother-in-law discounts on everything.
This is why I had said, as we were watching it at this moment, that I thought he had poor emotional intelligence, because I was thinking the only possible thought he must have had, as far as like if he truly loves Lagertha in the selfish kind of way, would be that what he saw was, oh, if I can sever her from her main attraction to this land, her rule in Kattegat, then I can isolate her and take her for mine.
I hadn't considered that.
I can offer her sanctuary. I can offer her better things, you know, whatever. Like he does offer, especially when he talks to Bjorn.
So it just goes to show you that, I mean, that's a great point. I hadn't even considered it. But now that I'm thinking about it, so Rollo's spending all this time in Francia just kind of going, yeah, this is all right. But his heart and his soul really is a Viking, and he wants to be with his people. So even if he can't go back there and live, if he could go there and set up a situation where he could take back the best parts of that with him and have them and say, the woman who I've always loved and my, you know, what he thinks at least is his biological son, then that would be a great gain to him. And to give them something, like, because when he tells Bjorn, his life would be so sweet. So, I mean, it is poor emotional intelligence to try to do that. But at the same time, it comes from this place of almost a desperate longing for something that you're never going to get back.
Unless he just plays from the hip and he just tries to opportunize the next moment that results from the previous action. I don't know. And maybe there's a better explanation that somebody else can offer us.
I don't know. I think you hit the nail on the head when you said that if he had helped them to defeat the other two, being Ivar and Harald, then he wouldn't be able to, there would be no need for them to come to Francia with him. Now there is a need. But that was a big gambit too, because he had to know that they were going to escape this with their lives, and then he had to know that he was going to find them at this. There's a lot of jumps there, that
risks
that there was no guarantee of them happening.
So an irritated Bjorn interrupts this conversation between Lagertha and Rollo. Rollo repeats his offer then to Bjorn, and he states that Bjorn is his son. Bjorn has heard of this, but he has his doubts. Rollo pleads with him, offering Bjorn every opportunity in Francia. Bjorn feels that Rollo has made his decision when he sided with Ivar. So we've already alluded to our thoughts, or at least my thoughts, on Bjorn's behavior, where he's really trying to become his father in a way. And I do think, you know, ever since he's heard that the possibility of Rollo being his father, and then Rollo's behavior being the infamous traitor that he is, the further he wanted to be from that.
Right.
Even though it could be true.
Right.
That's why he's try to manifest Ragnar in himself.
I agree. I think that's the best way to explain it, the way that it's presented to us as the viewer. Because even Bjorn brings it up. He says there's two ways in which, you know, a son can take after his father. There's looks, and then there is spirit and principle. Mm-hmm. And in that sense, he is definitely Ragnar's son. And he just kind of makes that a declarative statement. He's just like, bam, there it is. And so I think the actual biological parentage of Bjorn matters less than who he decides he wants to be like.
That's a great point.
You know, that's what I think. Mm-hmm. It could be either one. You know what I mean? But it's because I never knew if I totally believed that it was him in the first place. You know, Lagertha gets presented with this information and she doesn't deny it to his face. So I feel like it's one of these classic cases where you're left as the audience to make up your mind for yourself. It could go either way, and you need to decide which scenario you think fits, because there's obviously not going to be a DNA test. So there you go. I mean, he's a lot bigger than Ragnar. So I mean, there's that, Bjorn. So
Rollo and Ragnar have the same parentage, right? I mean, there's...
Yeah. So who knows?
Yeah.
Who knows?
Same genes, right?
Or same fuzzy britches, anyway. After Bjorn kind of takes his leave and he's getting himself all worked up, you have Heckman and Rollo conversing as fellow Christians. And he kind of asks Heckman to give him a confession. He doesn't say it so explicitly, but he talks about the many uncountable sins that he has, and he's looking for some sort of absolution. But you have this weird mix within Rollo of his Viking roots and his Christianity. So I'm kind of wondering, does Heckman, you know, give him the rosary and say, do 10 Hail Freyas and 5 R Odins, and you will be, you know, and your sins will be forgiven, my son? How's this going to work?
But do you think Rollo thinks he's going to die here, and that's why he's doing this?
I think there's the possibility of that, because he knows what, or he at least he anticipates what Bjorn is about to do. So he wants to go clean into that afterlife. So I think he's hedging his bets, because he's already getting into Valhalla if somebody digs a blade into him. right? But as far as the Christianity side is concerned, you need to be kind of squared with the guy upstairs before all that happens. And so, you know, when Bjorn comes back to actually do the killing, the one part, you know, because I do agree with your assessment of Rollo as lacking in some sort of emotional intelligence, but he does pull a good one here. Mm-hmm. Because instead of pulling out his own weapon and trying to fight Bjorn, which would have got everybody's blood up and then he probably would have died, he just gets on his knees and he says, kill me. And he knowing that Bjorn's not going to do it, because a lot of the anger that Bjorn has is real mm-hmm. at the betrayal and everything else. That's not pretend. But he also knows deep down that there is still caring. And Bjorn is essentially a decent person because he was raised by his mother. And so at least that's my take on it. So he knows he played that well. But Bjorn eventually says, you're not worth the time it takes to clean the blood off my axe. Which is pretty harsh.
That is, yeah.
Especially from one warrior to another.
Yeah.
And he gets up, Rollo, and he says, we will never meet again. So I'm thinking that after everything else we see with Rollo in this episode, this is probably the last time that we're going to see Clive Standen in the show. Maybe not. I could be wrong. They could have him in two or three scenes next episode, you know?
It is a special guest appearance, Clive Standen, in the opening credits. So it does have that in combination with each other. Yeah, I agree with you. But when I before we move on from that scene, when Rollo says, I am sorry, that felt genuine. He meant those words. And Bjorn has a cold, no need traitor in response.
You know, it just goes to show you, though, don't wait too long to make up with family members like that. Because when you finally are sorry and you tell that person and then they're just like, well, it's too late. I'm already so pissed off at you. So when you eventually get the like the honest apology, then it's sometimes it's too late.
And that's worse than death in a way, especially if what we're thinking is correct about what Rollo's aims were as far as like deciding to side with Ivar, what he would have gained on the other side of that with Lagertha and Bjorn bringing them to Francia. He can take a piece of Kattegat back home with him. He's ended up with even worse, where there's this complete derision towards him and denial of even paternity.
And it hurts to see it happen, even though you've been mad at Rollo so many times and over the years in this series. Sometimes you love him, sometimes you hate him, but it's almost like you end up hating him on average more than not because of the way that he's acted and the acts that he's perpetrated. And no one can be blamed for that. But at the same time, it still hurts you to see that a little bit. Or it did me. I can't speak for anyone else.
Seeing him say sorry like that, I had some emotion.
Our next scene is Rollo back with Ivar, and they are discussing the deal that mm-hmm. they are now going to strike with the terms that are extraordinarily favorable to Rollo.
I really like this scene.
It's good. He starts listing out this stuff, and you can just see the incredulity rolling over Ivar's face, and then it changes to anger, and then it changes to a certain amount of like bemused but angry resignation, maybe, for lack of a better term.
It is absolutely ridiculous what Rollo is proposing. But you made a good point, I thought, when we were watching this, that this wasn't his original intent as far as what the trade agreement was going to be. It's that he's upset after what took place between Lagertha and himself and Bjorn as well.
Yeah.
Do you want to expand on that?
Just the anger. He would have gotten a favorable deal for himself and Frankie as far as the trade post was concerned and all of the things that he was going to extract out of them. But he was so stung and raw from what happened because he just got the woman he's loved all his life denied. Mm-hmm. The his possible maybe child denied. Mm-hmm. They don't even want his help or anything. So he comes back and he's mad as hell. Mm-hmm. And then he takes it out. He feels like he made a mistake. He sided with the wrong team at this
right.
point because he did not get his stated objectives. And so he's going to take it out on Ivar's hide, basically. And he just lists all of these ridiculous demands that it seems like it would be hard to do in a 5-year period, just one of those listing of amounts, much less doing that every single year. You know, I feel like Ivar had to feel like Lando Calrissian in Empire Strikes Back. This deal's getting worse all the time. So yeah, he's being spiteful towards Ivar because of his own personal disappointment in the way things did not turn out. And he was going to give them the information on where the Kattegat remnant went, but it was predicated upon Ivar agreeing to his terms. So Ivar agrees to his terms and he gets Dantooined. He's basically told, hey, they're over here at this encampment. Ivar gets there with the troops and you find a cold fire and you know that they
and
were
regret.
There. And yeah, you find All you find is regret. Womp, womp, womp. But he does take her back with her. So at least, mm-hmm. you know, at least he did that. So none of these people are completely 100% evil. Some of them hang around in the 99% area, but...
He does take her back with him, but I'm sure his intent was not at all charitable.
No, but he didn't leave her to starve in the cold.
No.
So
Lagertha and Bjorn, I thought this scene was so badass because they're in Harald's hometown. Because you could see the whalebone archway that Harald got married under with Astrid. Yeah. So Lagertha and Bjorn steal a boat or boats. I think there was just one.
I believe it was just one because there's not a whole lot of them going over.
But it made me laugh seeing that. That was badass.
I like that prison style shanking they were doing though. Just like the ship.
I think that was Ube. So we have another scene in Wessex. Alfred and Judith talk about consolidating power through dynasty. She will find him a suitable bride. And he says, somehow I knew you were going to say that, or something along those lines. And it makes me wonder if there's going to be some friction between those two.
Okay, so I agree with your point that there's going to be some friction going on here. And it won't be so much about who Judith chooses. It'll be about the fact that Alfred is you know, I guess we could kind of say he inherited this from Athelstan, this directness and focus on these certain things that he finds important. And that looks and feels like a distraction at this point.
Yeah, I agree.
So,
but maybe she'll surprise him.
Maybe she'll surprise him. And I mean, he's of that age where he should be thinking about that kind of stuff. Like, mm-hmm. yeah, you know, so, but like I said, you know, Athelstan's son raised by Ecgbert is going to be of a different breed than a lot of normal people. So,
meanwhile, we see Æthelred defeat the Viking invaders in Winchester. This also ought to strengthen Alfred's rule because here he's having success defeating Vikings here via his brother. But I also wonder if this is going to make Æthelred feel that maybe he deserves rule more. But I'm hoping we're not going to have a typical rivalry that we've seen. Hopefully Æthelred and Alfred are going to have a better relationship than some of the other brother relationships we've seen in the show.
I hope so. I hope so because I like both of them to a certain extent. Neither of them are my favorite characters in the show, but I like both of them. And it would be nice to see a set of brothers break that mold of rivalry or the way that Halfdan and Harald were, to where one of them was ascendant and the other one was kind of like the sidekick. You know, that would be nice too to see that. But I mean, of course, that is their dynamic at this point. But, you know, Æthelred did give that up for the good of, because he was the actual natural son. So I don't know. It's hard to say. I guess it's just going to be a test of Æthelred's character to see if he can, you know, I'm hoping that there's going to be some sort of event or something that gives Æthelred some insight to say everybody has a part to play in what he would believe to be God's plan. And I just need to play my part. And Alfred needs to be king because of all of the good stuff that he's doing. And he just follows through with that.
But the fact that they made a point to show him screaming like he was, which was very reminiscent of Ivar's tantrum that he had when he discovered that Lags and Bjorn were not at the encampment. There's some pent in frustration.
Yeah.
But hopefully it's just that battle blood that's being expressed or whatever that's called.
The battle rage, battle lust.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe we're getting set up to have him and Ivar be like opposites. So when they meet out on the battlefield, we're going to get a really good scene between the two.
Happen.
And we feel like they're equally formidable on mm-hmm. some sense or equally driven. So when they return, when Ivar comes back to Kattegat and Harald asks him if he, you know, if his search was fruitful, and it wasn't. They were gone. But he does have Margrethe with him. And Vitserk shows kindness and consideration to her. You know, he's like, why, you know, just looking at her like, well, why is she tied up? Which Harald wondered that too. Like, why do you have this woman tied up? What's going on here? And I mean, for somebody who we've seen participate in rape, that's actually like, if he's asking you something like that, then you're probably doing something wrong. But so he picks her up and takes her away. And Ivar is pretty dismissive of that. He's like, you know, she's possessed by some evil spirit, and you know, you're crazy too if you want to have anything to, you know, to do with her. And you see the look that Harald gives Ivar at that point. He kind of gives him a glance, like, all right, I feel like the wheels are spinning in his head. Like, how much good am I going to get from this alliance going on too much further?
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that there's any treachery afoot yet or whatever, but I'm wondering how long Harold's going to stick around before he goes back to his own.
Well, why that specifically would get him thinking like that? Like, why do you think?
I think he might see it as an indication that Ivar is he's not
erratic.
He's erratic. He doesn't possess the maturity of a leader. I mean, like when we're talking about leadership in this capacity, you know, I just referenced how we might be made to see Ivar and Æthelred as being opposites on the battlefield. But if you look at Ivar and Alfred as opposite leaders, as opposite kings, look at the way that Alfred handled a bit of adversity mm-hmm. with people who were in his own camp. Mm-hmm. And now look at the way that Ivar's handling it mm-hmm. completely night and day, not listening to people, just spouting off at the mouth whenever, no measured response, taking in all of the information. So it's to Harold, that's got to be a bad sign. This guy's just a wild card in probably the worst possible way for a leader. When you make impulsive decisions that affect yourself, it's one thing. When you make them that affect the whole kingdom, not so good.
Next, we have Bjorn, Lagertha, Heckmund making their way somewhere into England's interior. And once they get on land, Bjorn plays with some sheep. Which is a callback again to Ragnar and goats. Lagertha speaks to Heckmund and she's seeking assurance regarding his protection. She wonders if he will betray them, and he says he loves her.
She does not want to be fed to the wolves. And I don't blame her. Mm-hmm. He's back in his element. I mean, you got to look at it a little bit from her point of view. I feel like it could go in any direction, but I have a reasonable amount of faith that he's going to be cool about it and try to keep his word and sell the idea to Alfred. But you think about it, you know, she's been betrayed so many times by so many men. And on top of that, you know, it wasn't that long ago that he was one of Ivar's men. So it's like, we'll see.
I mean, so far he's living up to everything he says.
Yeah.
But I have my doubts myself.
Yeah. That's all I'm saying. I'm cautiously optimistic that he's going to keep his word, but there are some doubts.
We have a quick scene where Ivar has an issue with his leg brace and his servant who's trying to adjust it or I don't know, oil it. I don't know what's going on there. The woman that he freed from slavery spies openly like a creep. He invites her in. He wants to know if she is married, and she says in so many words that she likes being free from obligations, and also she tells him her name is Freydis. His immediate instinct is to trust her. She says she would give her life for him, and what does he want her to do? So there's probably so many different ways he could use this offer. Mm-hmm. He could use her as an assassin, maybe right. Against Harold, maybe against Rollo while Rollo's there. Maybe... like I had speculated earlier, use her as a prop Lagertha. But his main goal is to defeat Lagertha, and Lagertha is now in England. So it's really hard to imagine what she could do against Lagertha at this point if he's thinking along those lines.
Well, now that they've come back after the break, I think the next couple of episodes are going to probably introduce some new characters or at least new dynamics between existing characters. And then it'll probably become a little bit clearer to us as the viewers, like how he could potentially go. But I think the most likely thing you said was about Rollo. Like if she could get him into Rollo's bed before he goes back to Francia.
Put something else in his little vial other than the Viagra.
Yeah. And then, you know, that takes care of the problem of Kattegat having to deliver on all of these ridiculous demands that Rollo made. But then, you know, that's a special guest star extending into a second episode or possibly a third. So who knows? So our final scene of the episode is the Vikings being brought into Alfred's court, I guess, for lack of a better term, in that cage that we talked about before, the rolling cage that probably housed Ragnar at some point. And of course, Heckmund, being who he is, gets to ride in on a horse next to Æthelred. But these guys have to be kept in the cage because there's still an unknown quantity, and the crowd is screaming for their blood. Murderer and killer and this and that. And so the looks on their faces as they get out, especially Bjorn, the last one to get out, and he kind of looks forward before the screen goes blank at the end of the episode, and he's like, have we just walked into the lion's den?
Yeah.
So.
Which, it was a weird way to end the episode. That was my initial feeling.
Mm-hmm. Do you still feel that way? Or do you feel like it fits a little more now? Or?
Well, now that I've seen it and you watch it again, it doesn't, it's not as abrupt because you expect it. So it's really hard to answer that question. But it didn't taper smoothly enough for me, if that makes sense.
Yeah. No, I get it. I get what you're saying. All right. So that covers our coverage of the episode. Now it's time to go to you guys and see what you think.
Yeah, and stay tuned for after feedback as we'll get everybody up to speed for what's been going on with No Ship Network and other content you can access by us.
All right, into feedback. First off, we have three, yes, count them, three pieces of feedback from Brian. And the first one starts out, woohoo, guys, and probably smoking lady. Finally, it's here. No more Last Kingdom BS to get my Vikings fixed. It's here. Ivar will kill Lags. Boo. But it's got to happen. Then we'll get the battle we've been waiting for. I don't have anything else, but it's going to be good, people. And I checked my crest. If I'm not Viking lineage, I don't know where a dark-skinned Viking would be. Ha ha, tanned Viking. And his second piece of feedback says, tanned Viking here, Brian. Meh, other one is way better. But anyways, I just listened to your last year's ending pod, and I realized I was just a little wrong, but I know Paul is going to hate this. Ivar kills Lagertha early in season to become a king, but also Harald Topknot will consider himself a king. I'll be quick with the rest. Bjorn will team up with old Uncle Rollo at some point, awesome, and will kill Ivar. I hope that pimp and priest will have to choose from England and uppity women or Kattegat, and I'll say more lenient morals, he'll go with the latter. After the first episode, I know, who wouldn't, LOL. One last thing, I'm a follically challenged male myself. Can I get one bald Viking? I mean, it's ridiculous how great these guys' hair looks. They have these flowing locks, and they cut it with top knots in weird middle school skinned on the sides crap. Damn it, it's not possible to not have one fucking bald Viking. Ah, okay, I'm done. See you probably smoking hot lady, Paul, and also balding friend. Wait, are we? Yeah, I think so. Bald besties. I think so. You're my best friend. LOL, JK, kinda. Actually, Brian, I'm probably going to be giving myself a haircut today because I like to keep it super, super short, and it's grown for about a week. And I need to trim it right down to nothing.
Well, how do you feel about the fact that there's not a representative baldy within the Viking male population right now?
I really don't give it too much thought. It's almost like whenever there is somebody who is bald, I tend to look at how they present them. But it doesn't make me judge anything. Like I don't feel like I'm part of a group. I don't have a group identity with other bald people. It's just something that happens to people as you get older. Sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes you see guys walking around with gray hair in their full head of hair at 65. You know, good for them. But I did like how the last couple of seasons of Ragnar, he went for the completely bald look. That mm-hmm. was nice to see, because it can show you that, you know, you don't have to have that, you know, women still swooned over. I think they preferred the hair on him, to be honest, but I think the women still swooned over him with the bald look. So it's not that big of a deal. So the last piece of feedback from Brian is, he says, I don't have cable, so I'm watching 1, 2, 3 movies for Vikings a day later, but last year I said Heckman would take her back to England. I think I did anyways, LOL, but I like the way that the show's going. Gotta work. I'll be back. My bestie and probably smoking hot lady and Paul. Yeah, this letter was titled Told You Fuckers. So I don't remember him specifically saying that, but then again, there's a lot of feedback that we get.
the email you just sent us prior was saying Ivar would kill Lagertha, that Bjorn would team up with Rollo to kill Ivar.
Yeah.
So maybe that could still happen.
Yeah, who knows? Anyway,
I think Lagertha's going to die in England.
Yeah, I'm kind of leaning towards that too. That seems like probably the most likely scenario there.
Thank you, Brian.
Thank you, Brian.
Up next, we have Barbara. And she says, Dear Em and Steve, how great to be writing feedback for your Vikings podcast. I noticed the other day that I subscribed to 20 podcasts, 9 of which are No Ship, 4 are Twin Peaks related, including Sparkwood and 21. So thanks again for doing what you do. And with this podcast and the few episodes of Hannibal, don't forget to get some food and sleep too. It was good to hear the theme tune and to see the opening credits again, though I found the episode mostly underwhelming. But having seen the season trailer, I'm hopeful that it will get more exciting. what a shitty place Kattegat will be with Harald and Ivar in charge, and it's probably not long before one of them betrays the other. Ivar isn't exactly brimming with sympathy for Harald's losses, so I don't get the impression that he's going to be a replacement brother for him. They're both ambitious, but Ivar has the edge, with him being a sociopath and all. Does anyone else miss the old Floki before he went to Iceland to set up the most boring cult in the world? I miss Trickster Floki, giggling with his eyeliner all smudged and taking the piss. He needs to get back to Kattegat and stir things up. Agreed.
Yes, yes.
And here comes Rollo. He doesn't look right without his top off, swinging an axe, shoveling mushrooms down his neck. What?
Remember when they would eat the mushrooms to go into that battle craze?
Yeah, but shoveling mushrooms down his neck? That's hard to imagine. I need a visual demonstration. Can somebody draw that or
there might be
animate
a GIF.
That?
Maybe there's a GIF somewhere on the internet. Yeah.
Barbara goes on to say, he's too important to do battle now. What are those powders that he's taking? Some kind of fancy French medicine? It's Viagra, because he was about to bend Ivar over.
Yeah.
His big revelation didn't seem to come as a surprise to anyone, including Bjorn, who'd rather believe that Ragnar is his daddy. I hope Rollo is wrong when he says, we will never meet again. He's one of my favorite characters in the show. Doesn't Lagertha look great with gray hair? She does, actually.
Yeah.
Poor bonkers Margrett isn't looking so good, though. Maybe Vitzerk will nurse her back to health. I don't quite trust Heckman, and I'm not sure what he'll do once they get to England. He's so conflicted and full of self-loathing. Freydis is going to be important. I'm not sure if it will be a relationship in the conventional sense, what with Ivar being boneless, but he holds her in high regard, and I think she will influence him. Possibly in a good way? Maybe.
We can hope, but...
And she's offering herself in service to him, so...
You know,
he's going to be leading the influence here, I think.
Right. But she, you know, we can't close out the possibility that because she came to him, she could be looking to manipulate him too.
Yeah.
That's also something that could be in the cards.
Barbara ends with, can't wait to hear what you guys and all the listeners have to say. Skull, Barbara. Triple kisses.
Thank you, Barbara. I totally agree with what you're saying about pretty much everything in here, but especially I do miss the old Floki. Floki was always one of my favorite characters on the show. Most of the time, probably my favorite character on the show. And I miss that old trickster side of him where, like you said, he's got the smudged eyeliner and he's doing his giggle and he's got the crazy hair. And I had kind of taken to this idea that we had a few seasons ago to where he might become the new seer, and that never came to fruition. And so that was a little bit disappointing, but I thought, well, maybe they have something better for him in store. But no, not really. He's just leading, as you say, the world's most boring cult in Iceland. Fun. I'm not real super stoked about that storyline. It was okay for season 5A, but for season 5B, it's going to have to move at a faster pace or go somewhere else.
Yeah, resolve it.
Yeah.
Now.
Like they can just decide to pull up stakes and leave, or it can get a lot better real quick. One of the two. And the other thing about what a shitty place Kattegat's going to be, because you know, you have Eivind talking about how Iceland's a shit place. Well, that's probably what Kattegat is right now. Who wants to live under the rule of Ivar? I mean, that's got to suck. And I think you're right, Barbara, when you say that, you know, Ivar isn't exactly brimming for sympathy with Harald's losses. So there's going to be some friction between them towards the end of it. Or somewhere, I won't say towards the end of it, at somewhere after this point. Just, and like I explained in the podcast, my views on that look that he gave after Vitzerk took Margrett away.
And as far as Rollo is concerned, when I first saw Rollo at the end, in the finale of season 5A, I rolled my eyes so hard. And then when I saw him at the opening of this, I rolled them again. But it was made all right with that scene between him and Ivar when he was making his trade arrangements known.
Yeah.
That was sweet.
It
was worth it.
Yeah, it does make it worth it. It makes you kind of like, oh, you wish that he had sided with the others, obviously, but it's kind of like a nice little consolation prize.
Which, and I was rolling my eyes about it, but Rollo was a favorite character of mine early on because I liked the complexity. I liked the war within him. Mm-hmm. That was very interesting. But, you know.
Eventually you
want to. Now he's in Francia.
Yeah. I think sometimes in television shows, when this was fun, but if you have too much of it, it gets to be a distraction from letting the rest of the characters develop and having the show go in its own direction. So once we put Rollo back on the shelf, he probably needs to stay there. And so I'm hoping that I know other people are saying they're hoping not, but, you know, I'm kind of hoping that once this is the last time that we see him, just so the rest of it can kind of do what it is. He's already served his purpose.
So for this holiday season, replace your elf on the shelf with Rollo on the shelf.
I think it would sell a lot more.
All right, that's it for our feedback section. And I just want to let everybody know that we are producing other content on our Patreon. You can access our Patreon through our website at noship.net. We've been covering the series Hannibal. We are in the first season. We're up to episode 9. We'll be covering episode 9 this coming weekend. That's been a lot of fun. And we've been doing that for our core listenership because a number of them are fans of the show Hannibal. We actually had one of our listeners, known as Metal Mike, send us the entire series just to get us to watch it. And we did. And we are so grateful for that. And we decided we wanted to cover it in seriousness. So we've been doing that for our Patreon. As well as on our Patreon, we cover other things such as random discussions about other television series. We've discussed The Leftovers. We've discussed
Sharp Objects.
Big Little Lies. We're going to be discussing The Expanse coming up here soon. Mm-hmm. Cause we've been watching that. Anything that we're watching outside of our usual content that we're providing on iTunes, we're discussing on our Patreon.
And also the very fun List podcasts, which are those things are just such a blast.
They are.
You know, you have a drink, you talk about TV shows you love, movies you love, books you love. We just did music we love, you know, perfect albums and stuff.
Which we haven't done books.
No, we've talked about books on Patreon podcasts before, but like I would like to do book lists. Yeah. That would be something fun to do.
So what that is we have our listeners write in their top lists of top television or top movies or top perfect albums. And it's actually the listeners who come up with the particular lists that they want featured. And we've read those lists and shared our own lists on those podcasts. And those are, as Steve said, a lot of fun to do. As far as the social media presence that we have, or lack of, would be more of an accurate description. We're pulling back more and more from social media. I never liked being on social media to begin with, and I like it even less now. So I am still going to post our Vikings podcast links onto our Facebook, but eventually we're going to close the Facebook, just so you guys know. And we do a limited interaction on our Twitter, but we are best reached via our Gmail. So if you want to communicate with us, please respond or write to us via our Gmail.
That gets checked daily.
Yeah.
So that would be like Em said, that would be the best way to communicate with us.
All right. Well, that's it for this coverage of episode 511 of Vikings, The Revelation. We will be back next week with episode 512.
All right. So everybody take care till next time. I'm your host, Steve.
And I am your host, Em.
Good night.
Axe time, sword time, shields are splintered, y'all.